This is Empowering Kindness.
Delving into the work of local organizations that are making a difference.
Discovering how to create positive change in our community.
It's Empowering Kindness with Sam Sinjari and friends on AM 800.
Welcome, Windsor Essex. I'm Sam Sinjari. You're listening to Empowering Kindness. I'm here with my co-host, Chantel Meadows, and our show conducts interviews with local charities, not-for-profit organizations from the surrounding Windsor and Essex region on a weekly basis. Our show dives deep in the needs of our community members and organizations. Welcome.
Thank you so much, and good afternoon, Windsor Essex. I'm Chantel Meadows here on Empowering Kindness, and I'm really excited to have Anna Jurak here, the Executive Director of the Brain Injury Association of Windsor and Essex County, and they've been around since 2001 and doing some incredible things. And so Anna's going to join us for the next hour, telling us all about the great services they provide, some of the advocacy that they've done over the last few years, as well as some amazing projects that they've done that have really brightened up our communities. So Anna, welcome to our show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So the Brain Injury Association of Windsor and Essex County, I know they've been really growing over the last few years. We've been hearing about some of the great things that you've done in the community. And so kind of can you give us a review on who you are and what do you do?
Okay. Well, it started in 2001 by a group of really dedicated people, people who had some relationships to people with a brain injury. And it was sort of latent for a while, just really low key, doing a few things. And then the board in 2017 made this really big decision to hire a full-time executive director. Up until that point, it was always a part-time director or a lot of the board members doing the actual work. So it was very, very small. And then in 2017, I was hired late in the year. And when they hired me, they said, look, it's a contract. We can only promise you a year because we don't know how much money we're going to have. We don't know where this is going. So it was a big leap of faith on their part to do that. But it worked out. And here, 6.5 years later, I'm still there. And now, for 6 years, I've been the only employee. And now we've actually grown again and hired another 1.5 employees. So, and about 10 facilitators. So I call them part of my support team. So we've really been growing and continuing to grow.
And so who do you support in the community?
We support anyone that's affected by someone with a brain injury. So what that means is it could be someone with a brain injury who's living with, you know, with the effects of a brain injury, and or their caregivers. So this include family and friends. So it could be, you know, you've got a good friend who's got a brain injury and you just don't know how to support that person, or you don't understand what they're going through and you want to learn more, or you want to talk with other people who, you know, live with people with brain injuries. So we offer support to anyone who's involved in that. And as well, in addition to the support for people with brain injury, we offer public education programs.
Okay, and what do those public education programs look like for the Brain Injury Association of Windsor Essex County?
So this is our big thing, is preventing brain injury. We would like to have it that we don't have anybody with brain injury. We know that's impossible, but if we can prevent a brain injury, that's a really big focus as well. So we do a program called Helmets for Kids, and this is for children in the lower income areas, who otherwise maybe their parents couldn't afford or wouldn't think to buy them a helmet. And it is the law for children under 18 to wear a helmet. So they need to have one if they have a bicycle to actually wear a helmet. So what we do is we ask organizations that have a lot of children and to organize the children to come together. And then we do a short session on bicycle safety. And then we fit each child with a brand new helmet. And they don't always know that it's not just wearing the helmet, it's how you wear the helmet that's very important as well. Because, yes, oh, you know it, I see. Okay, I don't know if you've taken any program where you've got information, but yeah, the 2v1 method. So we make sure that the helmets fit the child properly. sometimes if their parents there, they'll say, can you get one a little bit bigger? No, you can't. It has to fit snugly. If the child's head can move in it, you know, could come off, it's just not going to protect as well. It's made to fit snugly on the head. So we show them, you know, how the proper fit, and we give them the helmet, and we show them how to strap it up and make sure that it's, you know, forward over their head, you know, and 2 inches above the the eyebrows, and the V around the ears. The strap should go in a V around the ears, and then only one finger should fit underneath. So it should be snug. I so often see kids with it sort of hanging, you know, back, or the straps are hanging. And, you know, while officially they do have a helmet on their head, it's not going to protect them like it should if they fall. It's funny, I did a session once at a community center, and I asked the children why they had to wear a helmet. And of course, they all knew, to protect my head. And then I asked them, I said, well, what's the other reason? Well, they came up with a whole bunch of really strange things, but they didn't answer. And so I finally said, well, because it's the law. And one kid said, not if I don't get caught, it's not.
Oh, dear.
And I said, yeah, exactly. Oh, dear. So we really try to emphasize the importance of that. And we actually have a video on our website of a young man who was wearing his helmet and did fall, and his helmet saved his head. He has no doubt, his mother has no doubt, that without the helmet, it would have been very, very serious. And so we made a little short interview that you can watch, and how his mother always made sure he wore his helmet. She was very, very strict about that. And she really believes the helmet saved his life. You know, had it not been for that helmet. Because, you know, you don't think you're going to fall, but it's just one stone, one divot, one look away, and you can fall. And you hit your head on the concrete, and that's a very severe brain injury. So that's one of our programs. So we provide helmets for kids. Another program we have is called STAR, and that is an acronym for Stop. Wait a minute. I don't think I got what I'm going through. Tell, get assessed, and rest. So the reason that program started was I found out from a high school principal that despite the fact that teachers and parents and coaches have to take concussion protocol.
Rowan's Law.
Rowan's Law, 2018, came into being provincially. You know, they all have to take the course in that, and they have to learn about it and know the protocol if someone gets hit in the head. If the kids don't tell, it doesn't matter. So the whole program is around the need for someone to tell a responsible adult. So whether they're in the schoolyard, whether they're in the classroom, whether they're on the, you know, sports field, if they hit their head for whatever reason, and it could be a mild one, whatever reason, they should go tell a responsible adult who will go through the protocol and decide the next steps. So we go through a little bit about brain anatomy and what happens to the brain when it gets hurt. And also all the negative repercussions, like all the different symptoms that could happen, depending on where you hit your head, so that they understand the ramifications. Because, you know, well, children, they don't really understand the long-term effects of the things that they do. And so we really want to hammer in, you know, these are the things that could happen, and you can stop it. It doesn't have to happen. So just follow, you know, wear the helmet, follow safety rules, and tell someone when you get hit in the head. And then the last one is one for healthcare professionals. Basically, it's, or mainly, it's about how to manage some of the behaviors of people with a brain injury. For instance, someone working in a long-term care home who has maybe one resident there who has a brain injury, and their behaviors are very different as a result of their brain injury, and they may not know quite how to handle it. So again, there's some information about the brain, what exactly happens when a neuron's injured, what happens when different parts of the brain are injured, and then the ramifications of it, all the social, psychological, emotional, and physical changes that arise after brain injury. So we go through all of that, and then how to manage the behaviors. So it's a very practical, hands-on instruction, and we do that, like I said, in long-term care homes. I also teach some of the students at St. Clair College in the different programs, healthcare programs, the social service workers program and the PSW program at TRIOS. So I try to get the word out as much as possible.
So you're a busy lady.
I'm very busy.
And so if someone was listening today and they wanted to learn more about the programs that you have, mm-hmm. how is the best avenue to reach out to you?
It depends on what they're comfortable with. Our website is really, really full of information. I try to put like everything on the website. So you can go there. Or if you're not comfortable with that, you can always call. And I will outline, you know, the generalities for you. If you're interested further and you want to actually participate in some of the programs or the sessions that we have, then we do an intake with our social worker. And she gets more information about you or your loved one and, you know, guide you to the best programs, you know, that are appropriate for your situation.
And Anna, do you guys have social media?
Yes, we're on Facebook and X.
Twitter. Old Twitter, formerly known as Twitter.
Yeah, X, yeah.
Okay, and so people can reach out, follow you on the social media channels, but really go to the website.
The website.
And you have lots of information.
Yeah. The website has a lot of information about all our programs and services. There's a page there. It's called Request for Service. So if you want to have someone call you and give you more information or sign up for programs, that's what you fill out. We have another form that you can fill out if you want our newsletter sent to you, which comes out quarterly. And then we do have some for the specific programs. So if a teacher wanted me to come to their school to talk to their, you know, their students, they would fill out a form there and we'd work out the schedule and then I'd go to the school.
Amazing. Well, Anna, it's been a quick segment. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break. But in the meantime, you're listening to Empowering Kindness on AM 800.
Gain key insights into making change happen. You're listening to Empowering Kindness on AM 800.
Welcome back. I'm Sam Sanjari, and you're listening to Empowering Kindness. I'm here with my co-host, Chantel Meadows. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Sam. And I'm Chantel Meadows here on Empowering Kindness on this Saturday afternoon. And I'm with Anna Jurak. She is the executive director of the Brain Injury Association of Windsor and Essex County. And we've been talking about all the amazing programs that they provide right here in Windsor, Essex County. And even Chatham Kent, she's been out there speaking to both, you know, clinicians, support families, schools, and she's a busy lady. And now she has a little bit of more of a support team. And so I know, Anna, you really wanted to highlight some of the programs that you have at the Brain Injury Association of Windsor and Essex County.
Yeah, because those programs are the basis of our being. Our mission is to enhance the lives of those affected by a brain injury. So that it means people with a brain injury and then the people around them. So anybody who's affected. And one of the basis of all of this is our support, peer support groups. So we have a couple variations of them. We have a peer support group for both caregivers and survivors. And, you know, they just come together. All our programs are facilitated by social workers. So they bring topics of interest to them, bring them information, but also facilitate the discussion among them on different topics that affect them. Sometimes, you know, she'll come in with a topic and then the people who are there will say, no, you know, something's come up. We really need to talk about this. So they're quite agile in you know, changing the topic and focus to accommodate what they're interested in because it's about them and it's for them. So we do that. We have another one that's just for caregivers. And so usually that's spouses or siblings or sometimes even children of people with a brain injury. And so, again, their issues are a little bit different than those living with a brain injury. And they really need to talk to somebody about it. And in these sessions, they learn about how to manage different things. They learn, you know, what worked for them, what didn't work for them, what kind of doctors they should see, what lawyers they should see. I mean, they talk about all kinds of things. And we're starting a new one in March. And this is for parents of children with a brain injury. So these are kids from like 5 years to 18 years.
Okay.
Because their issues are different than the caregivers of an adult child or of a spouse, because they've got issues of school to contend with and their brains are different because they're still growing. There's just so many different issues related to that. So that starts on March 23rd, and that's for any parent who has a child with a brain injury and wants to learn more. And sometimes it could be just how to manage things at home with other siblings, because often brain injury is an invisible injury. They don't look like they're sick. They don't look like there's anything wrong with them, but it's their behavior that shows that there's something off. And siblings may be jealous of a sibling with a brain injury because they're getting special attention. Maybe they don't have to go to school, or they get special attention at school, or their parents give them special attention. So there's rivalries. So it's how to manage those things, how to manage in school. Perhaps the child's still having difficulty knowing what questions to ask, knowing what kind of accommodations can be made for their child. So it's a whole lot of different things. So that's going to be a new program. And concurrently, we're going to have one for children. So children can come in, and because this is new, we're not quite sure how it's going to unfold, because it could be the kids just want to play together. Yeah. And it's just kind of nice to be with other kids who accept them and don't question them and understand what they're going through. Or ideally, there will be a little bit of like peer support in there, some discussion on issues that, you know, they're having difficulty with. So I think it's going to really depend on what kids show up, the ages of them, and we're going to just have to sort of work around that. And the social worker that's involved in that knows that. So there's going to be some, you know, I told them when got hired for the position that flexibility is like number one,
right?
Because we really don't know. I can actually say that for almost all the groups, although not as much as for this, you know, upcoming group, because it's so new for us. So we have that. And then another important aspect of brain injury is the socialization. There's a lot of isolation involved, because just imagine, you know, you're a, you know, A-plus personality, you're involved in the community, you've got lots of friends, you're doing all kinds of things, you get a brain injury. All of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, but after the brain injury, there are a lot of changes in your life. You may not be able to tolerate noise or sound. So when your friends invite you to a movie, you say, "Ah, oh, I can't go. It's too loud in there, or the bright lights bother me." So, you know, after a while, they're going to quit asking you to go to the movies. They ask you to something else, and you say, "Oh, you know, I can't because of this and that, and, you know, I get too tired too easily." So they start losing friends.
Mm-hmm.
Even though family knows what happened to you, they too cannot fully understand, because you look okay.
Right.
Like, what's wrong with you? Why can't you work? Why can't you do this? You know, why are you going to sleep so early? Why are you always tired? All kinds of things. So it's really, really difficult for them. And so in these programs, they talk with other people, like, how did you manage this? How can I do this? How can I get beyond this? I think the biggest thing that comes out of a peer support group is learning how to manage these things and learning to adjust to your new reality, because you are not the same person you were before. There's so many changes in your life, and there could be changes to your personality as well. I have one example of one of our clients, members. And she had a very, very bad car accident many years ago. And now this is long haul stuff. This is 30 years later.
Okay.
But she now is quite aware of what she's capable of doing and not capable of doing. But there are still some things that the brain injury sort of overwhelms her. Very quiet, low key, calm, gentle person. Yells and swears when she gets upset, which upsets her in turn, because that's not her real personality, but it's a result of the damage to her brain, and she doesn't have a lot of control over that part. So that happens. Anger management, like a lot of people, their big complaint is, you know, I used to be this really nice, quiet guy. Now I get angry at everything. Now, some of it's from the brain injury. Some of that anger and frustration is due to the fact that they are different than they were before.
Right.
And they will not go back to what they were before. So they have to adjust to the new person that they are now. When they get to that point, or when they start moving towards that point, is when their anxiety, depression, anger, and frustration about their situation starts to get less and hopefully resolve, you know, in the long term.
So lots of support, And again, if you're just joining us on the show, the Brain Injury Association of Windsor and Essex County, they provide great programs and supports for those living with a brain injury, their family, their caregivers, even our teachers and our sports officials, coaches in our community. Anna, can you tell us your website again?
www.biawe.com.
And so you can go to your website and learn a little bit more about what you guys do, get some more information about some of the programs. As a younger mom, I love the bicycle helmet project that you have, but also the sports, because I think so many kids get not diagnosed with concussions properly, even though we have Rowan's Law.
Yeah, concussion diagnosis is difficult because it's not something you can see, and it doesn't show up generally on an MRI or CT scan. I mean, more severe brain injuries do, but those don't generally. So how it's diagnosed is through subjective questioning to find out the symptoms. And even then, doctors and nurse practitioners are a little bit reluctant to diagnose it. A great percentage, 89%, resolve on their own. So it's just a matter of resting, allowing the brain to heal, because it does, allowing it to heal, and then going back to your normal life step by step. So starting off with, you know, small things, and then if it doesn't cause any symptoms, moving up to more activity until it's finally resolved. However, there's always a percentage of people that the symptoms never go away. Some may diminish, some symptoms may go away, but they may have other symptoms. And that's what makes it difficult for people to accept their diagnosis. But with concussions, there's so many fallacies regarding it.
Okay. Anna, I don't want to cut you off, but we got to take a quick break. You're listening to Empowering Kindness on AM 800. We're going to come back and we're going to talk more about concussions.
Hear from those who give hope, help, and a future to people in need. You're listening to Empowering Kindness on AM 800.
Welcome back. I'm Sam Sinjari, and you're listening to Empowering Kindness. And I'm here with my co-host, Chantel Meadows. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Sam. And yes, I'm Chantel Meadows here on this Saturday afternoon. And we are here with Anna Jurak, and she is the executive director of the Brain Injury Association of Windsor and Essex County. And we've been learning about brain injury and the programs that are provided right here in Windsor, Essex, and even Chatham, Kent. And right before our break, we were talking a little bit more about concussion. You know, I've had some personal experience with concussion with my daughter. And, you know, luckily, our team of sports coaches identified that there was a problem as soon as she hit her head, even though she was eager to go back on that ice and keep skating. Unfortunately, she couldn't keep her legs on the ice, and she was like Gumby. The coaches automatically pulled her off, asked us to, you know, make sure she was okay, and within 20 minutes she started with a headache, and so spent the evening in the hospital, and then no school for about a week. But thankfully, the school was the most supportive, actually, of the organizations and making sure that she had a clean bill of health to go back to even recess play.
I'm so glad to hear that, because sometimes I hear other things. So that's really good. Yeah, that was a huge thing in 2018 that the Ontario provincial government made Rowan's Law. And I can't remember the bill number. I was just, you know, everybody just knows Rowan's Law. And that came as a result of a Rowan Stringer. She was a 17-year-old rugby player. Got a concussion on the field, didn't come off. I don't know all the details, whether, you know, she just didn't tell anybody or they didn't see it, whatever. She went back, got a second concussion. So it's called second concussion syndrome. When the damage was done the first time, if she would have gone off and let it rest, it probably would have resolved. But the fact that she went back and it probably had a concussion in pretty much the same place killed the cell, the neurons in the brain, and she died. She died.
Wow.
I mean, you don't expect a kid to die, you know, playing rugby. And so her father advocated for many years for this law. So it requires, like I said earlier, coaches, teachers, anybody involved in sports to know the protocol involved. Now, the protocol changes, not much anymore, but every 5 years there's this international forum on concussion, and all the experts come and all the papers and research they've done on concussion and brain injury, and they decide on best methods and best protocols and stuff. And so it hasn't changed much in the last couple of years, but it has over the years, and that's probably where there's a lot of misconceptions about concussion. First of all, you do not have to be unconscious. See, right. In the old days, it was like, well, if you can stand up and you could talk, you're okay. Just give your head a shake and get back in the game, right? Your head was, you know, what did they say, ringing your, yeah, you shook it off, ringing the, what did they say, ringing the bell or whatever?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's like a no-no. It's like off. So that's the first thing. You do not have to be unconscious. The second thing is, sometimes symptoms don't show up for hours or even a day later. So just because the person says, no, I'm fine, quite, you know, I feel okay right now, they still should stop whatever activity they're doing and rest, because the symptoms could show up the next day. And it could be, well, there's some red flag symptoms, like if their neck is very tight, or they've got a severe headache, or they're nauseous and vomiting. Those are, you go to the hospital like right this minute, kind of red flag symptoms. The other misconception is you do not have to wake them up every 15 minutes. Used to be that when you got hit in the head, they, you know, your mother or father would wake you up every, like, you know, half an hour, 15 minutes. And that was because for some reason they thought you would go unconscious, like, or you know, you go into a coma if you didn't do that. You don't do that anymore. You let them rest. Rest is good. That's what they need. And so when you follow the protocol, you know, the symptoms will go away in most cases.
So really, really important, once you've, you know, had a child or an adult even hit their head, to take that time, look for the symptoms, and seek medical professional help if you feel that you've had a concussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so very, very important. I hope they continue. All the sporting organizations and the schools continue to follow Rowan's Law. It's important for us to all understand and know those protocols for our community. But I know you also wanted to talk about some of the social programs that you have at the Brain Injury Association of Windsor and Essex County.
Yeah, just like I mentioned earlier, sometimes friends fall away, and a lot of people with brain injury, like an inordinate amount, it seems, are quite isolated. Nobody, you know, they, because of their changes in personality, you know, their friends drop off, their family drop off. All of a sudden, they're isolated. Nobody wants to be around them. Our programs always have a social element. Even the peer support groups have a social element. But we do specific socials as well. We've just started a music class. Actually, tonight's going to be the second class in it, and it's already proving to be quite popular. So it's just singing. Hopefully, we'll find out who has, you know, plays instruments, and I would love if we could put a band together. That would be like the coolest thing ever. But anyways, we're just getting started in that, and that should be like a lot of fun. And music is very good for the brain. There are so many parts of the brain that light up. And that's not even to mention, like I said, the social aspect and the fun aspect. We have a cooking class with a registered dietitian. And so she teaches them healthy cooking, and they make the stuff there together. Then they get, you know, they get to eat it, and then they take a package home so they can make it at home. So again, they're learning, but there's a social aspect to it as well.
Right.
And we have art sessions with an artist and a teacher. So they vary it each month. There's different things. I think this month they did wine glasses.
Okay.
So that sounded really fun. And you can tell because we get pictures of, you know, them doing their activities, and they all look so happy, and they're all so thankful that we offer this, because really gives them a chance to get together. Because as you know, when you're doing a craft like that, you're talking with others as well.
Right.
And so whether it's, you know, social talking or talking about their brain injury, it's really up to them. And it really is up to the dynamics of the group, you know, what they want to talk about, what mood they're in, you know, all that stuff. And then we do like a social, and that's different all the time. Like this month it's going to be going bowling, you know, all together. And I forgot about the young adult. We have a young adult group as well. And that's for people 18 to 30.
Okay.
For the same reasons we have the parental, you know, pediatric support group, we do a young adult because their issues are different too, right? They've got school, they've got dating, they've got jobs. Their issues are completely different than the other groups.
Yes.
And they like to hang together. You know, they do. The best part of all this is a lot of them become friends through these programs. And they, outside the programs, they get together. And that is a really good thing.
And so are these programs free for the people that you support?
All free, yeah.
All free.
Yep. Yep. And we have a weekly coffee chat too. So that started during COVID when we couldn't do anything else and has stayed because it's probably our most popular program. So that's done on Zoom and it's every Wednesday at 11 o'clock on Zoom. Okay. And people just get together and just talk and whatever they, you know, wherever they want to go. And, you know, I get the reports back of, you know, what they, you know, just sort of the general talk. Mm-hmm. Always makes me smile because they are all so helpful to each other. They are so happy to help each other. And when you get somebody new in the group, you know, they want to learn right about them and, you know, how they can help them. It's just, it's good because they've gotten something out of it. Now they want to give back. And that is another program we have called Peer Support where it's a one-on-one. So that's done by telephone every week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that could be with somebody anywhere in Ontario. We match you with anybody in Ontario. And those are really good, too. And it's a one-year program.
And so, you know, you have all of these great programs. Mm-hmm. How do you reach out to those who've been affected by brain injury in the community?
Well, that's where we have, do a lot of community outreach. So in 2018, we did this large project, and it was done all over Ontario, called Unmasking Brain Injury. So our clients painted a mask to show what they felt about their brain injury. Every mask was so different, and their explanations of how it represents their brain injury were so interesting. They wrote a narrative about either their, you know, their brain injury and how it affected them or what happened.
And so it was pretty magical then?
It was. And so this was displayed all throughout the city at these different parks and rec departments in Leamington and Essex. It went all over the county. People cried reading some of the stories.
Oh, amazing.
I mean, some of the stories are, yeah, they are amazing because, oh, well, it's just that it could happen to any of us. Like, you know, it's just, it's like one accident, one instance, one, you know, something, you know, one person was a teacher who got hit in the head with a basketball during phys ed class.
Wow.
Caused an injury and now can't go back to work. Another hit their head on a cupboard, you know, had a cupboard door open, got up too quickly, hit their head, caused a concussion.
Wow.
Like as many ways as you can think you can get a brain injury. And some of their stories are just so devastating, you know, being pushed down the stairs, you know, being beaten up.
Yeah.
Oh, just so many.
Well,
so,
let's leave it there. We'll talk a little bit more about the programs and what you guys have been doing in the community because you've done some pretty cool things lately. So I'm Chantal Meadows and you're listening to Empowering Kindness.
You're listening to Empowering Kindness, insights into local charity and nonprofit organizations on AM 800.
Okay. Welcome back. I'm Sam Sinjari, and you're listening to Empowering Kindness. I'm here with my co-host, Chantel Meadows. Welcome back.
Thank you so much, Sam. And we're here with Anna Jurak, the Executive Director of the Brain Injury Association of Windsor and Essex County. And they have so many incredible programs to support those living with a brain injury, as well as their family, friends, support workers, but also some of the awareness campaigns and social services that they provide for even getting kids out there with bike helmets on. And, you know, it always surprises me, Anna, how many kids are not wearing brain or not wearing their helmets and not protecting their brains. It's just incredible. And big rule in my home is that you must wear your helmet. My daughter's still in a car seat to protect her head. So take this very serious in the Meadows home. But so many of her friends are not wearing helmets. And she's like, Mom, they're breaking the law. I'm like, Lauren, hold on. Like, other mommies have different rules. But, you know, we can't stress the importance of, you know, getting helmets on these children.
Which is why I think the STAR program is very, very important, because we give reasons to the kids about why they should wear a helmet. And I'm sure that at least one of the reasons or, you know, or all of them about the brain and how it affects you, like I said, emotionally, socially, physically, is going to reach them and hit some chord with them so that they will remember next time, like, I don't want that to happen to me. You know, I don't want my friends to leave me. I don't want to, you know, miss school. I don't, you know, all the things that kids want to do. So you never know what you tell them that's going to hit the right spot where they're going to remember next time they go out, I've got to wear my helmet. But that's why the helmets for kids is important, because for the kids who can't afford it or whose parents, you know, you know, maybe have several children. And you know, helmets aren't cheap, at least the good ones. And so we provide it, you know, to them. And, you know, with some instruction on safety as well. So like I said, prevention is huge.
Yeah. And I know I was at one of your events at the Butterfly Lane opening, and you had some volunteers there doing your program, making sure that people knew how to do the two fingers and the two above. And so that was a great event and kind of a magical event for your organization.
It was great. And it still is. It's still there.
It's still there,
so
yes.
So it's Butterfly Lane, and it was the first alley in the city of Windsor to be named. And what I mean by that is that we actually have street signs that say Butterfly Way on it. And we had, I think, 16 artists paint butterflies in different motifs on garage doors and fences. So it was a real big community effort because, you know, we had to get permission from all the homeowners there to paint on their garage and or their fence. And then we had to coordinate all the artists to do all the painting. And when it was done, we had a big grand opening, and that was really special. Last year, we did a planting. So we had, native plants and planted as much as we could along the sides of the lane. And we had a lot of volunteers involved with that. And every year we do some kind of event there. So we do, the naming of or the unveiling of the sign was a big event, and then the planting was a big event. But what's really, really good is I've heard from people and people who live along the alleyway that there are more and more people going down the alleyway so that they could look at the murals. And, you know, people are talking about it. People are getting their picture taken with the murals. And there are tour groups, like a bicycle group and walking groups, that use that lane to go down. So a lot of people are getting to see it. And if the only point is that they know about us and that we exist and that we're there to help people with brain injury and to think about the people they know with brain injury and maybe think about them a little bit differently and with a little bit more kindness and understanding, then I think it was all worth it. And so it's still there. And we still encourage people to go down and visit. There's a lot of talented artists in Windsor, and just to see their artwork too is special.
And they were really proud of their work too, the artists that were there.
Oh, they were. When we had our opening, we offered them, you know, space there to promote their other art and stuff. And so they were quite happy with that. But yes, they do. And I've seen them use their pictures in some of their promotional materials and that, you know, the murals that they drew on the fences.
Wow, it's very magical.
And I had a lot of other neighborhoods ask for one too, and I went, you know what, that was a lot of work. I think once and done. but who knows, maybe in the future, maybe after a few years, maybe we can do another one. But I did get a lot of calls, can you do this our alley, because I think it actually brings safety to the alley, you know.
Yes.
Because there are more people walking through it.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, it's been up for a couple of years, and except for one time where we got a few of the butterflies pulled off a fence, because we had people with brain injury paint butterflies, and then we posted them on the fences. Last year, a few were torn off,
okay,
but they were thrown into a backyard. So one of the homeowners said, here are all the butterflies, and so we just put them back up again.
Right.
But other than that, like, we've been really lucky that there's been no, you know, damage or anything, or nobody's done anything to it. It's all still there and all nice, you know, nice looking. Nobody's harmed it.
Yeah, no, that's
so
great.
So to me suggests that, well, you know, that it's a very special place.
Wow. And so lots of different things that you're doing in the community. And again, if those who are listening want to learn more about the Brain Injury Association, you can check them out on Facebook, Twitter, or X, as well as their website. And the website again
is www.biawe.com.
And Anna, you know, I'm pretty passionate about the kid part of your programming. Mm-hmm. If a teacher was listening today and they wanted to learn more about your one program, how could they reach out to you?
There's a form right on our website. They can go to our website, look under the STAR program, and complete the form there, and then I get back to them, and then we discuss all the, you know, the basics of presenting at their school.
And so obviously to do all of this takes some money. If somebody was looking to help support the organization, how could they support you today?
Well, there's several ways. We have several fundraisers. We've got one coming up March 23rd. Love this one. It's called Dueling Pianos.
Okay.
If anybody's ever been to one, they'll know how much fun it is. And I know the first year we did it, nobody knew what it was. It's two pianos that play sort of against each other and change words around and, you know, play your requests. You know, the first year everybody came and was sort of just sitting there watching. And then as they started to know more about this, now they come in party mood, ready to sing and make their requests and dance and stuff. So it's a good time. It's at the Windsor Yacht Club on March 23rd. I'm just trying to think of the things that we do. Our golf tournament, that's at the Kingsville Golf and Country Club.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and you know what? Ever since I've been here, we've always had good weather. I know one year it was like dark and stormy all around us, and right in our field, it never rained. And I thought, wow, it was almost like, I don't know, protection all around us. But that's a beautiful golf course, and it goes to a good cause. And then our conference, we do a conference each year for healthcare professionals, and we bring speakers in from around Ontario, experts in specific areas of brain injury, and that's for healthcare professionals to keep up with, you know, the latest in research and the latest in clinical, you know, work. Because we're at sort of the end of Ontario.
Yes.
And so almost everything's like in London and Toronto. And not everyone, especially small clinicians or, you know, small organizations, don't always have either the manpower or the money to go to Toronto and London all the time. And so we offer a lot of these really important programs here. And that's always quite a success. We work with a partner, Hotel Du Grace Healthcare, provides us with, you know, the auditorium and a lot of the services there. So we're very happy for our community partners.
Absolutely. And on your website, can they donate online as well?
Oh, absolutely.
Perfect.
Right. On the opening page, big dot and the big on the right side, donate.
I love the big donate buttons. Yes, Anna.
Buttons. It's really important for us because we don't get funded by the government, which don't even get me started on that because I think we're part of the healthcare system. We prevent a lot of mental health problems because, again, imagine the anxiety and then leading to depression. And if we can avert that and have mentally healthy people. I mean, they have brain injury, but they, you know, still mentally healthy. We're diverting them from the, you know, the general health care in the city. And the other thing is if they're not, with all that anger and depression and frustration could lead to, you know, over-medicating, mm-hmm. resorting to alcohol, which then brings up a whole other addictions issue.
Absolutely.
So this whole triumvirate, and I think we prevent a lot of that. I know we prevent a lot of that. I know because our clients tell me and tell us that, you know, if it wasn't for, you know, what you offer there, this is what we'd be doing. So I know we are doing good work. And so, yes, donations are important. Sponsorships to our events are important. And then we apply for government grants. But the only problem with that is those aren't consistent funding.
Right.
And so each year we're always like, you know, what can we do this year? Without funding, we have to cut back on the things that we're doing.
Thank you so much, Anna, for joining us. If you want to learn a little bit more about the organization, check them out on Facebook, Twitter, or their website. Anna, thank you for joining me today.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you for this opportunity.
Absolutely. Thank you, Windsor Essex, and you're listening to Empowering Kindness on AM 800. We'll see you next Saturday.
You've been listening to Empowering Kindness,
a production by local philanthropist Sam Sinjari on AM 800.